Where do you stand as a leader? Are there things you would change about your business or organization? Welcome to What's Leadership Got to Do with It with your host, Rick Thiemann. Together, we'll explore the five dynamics that exist in every workplace, as well as answer some of your leadership questions. Now, here's your host, Rick Thiemann.
Hey, good afternoon, or even good morning to some of you on the West Coast. I'm your host, Rick Thiemann, here with our second show on What's Leadership Got to Do with It. Today, my guest is Ray Klein, who I'll more formally introduce in just a moment. But wanted to thank those who've dialed in today to listen to the program. As I mentioned, my name is Rick Thiemann. I'm the president of a firm called The Executive Group. We are located in Northwest Indiana, about an hour from downtown Chicago. The Executive Group, we've been in business for about 20 years. We're an organizational development and consulting firm, and we work with organizations to teach them how to link their human capital with their strategic intent. The show, What's Leadership Got to Do with It, is an outcome of the book that's in the process of getting ready to go to publish, also called What's Leadership Got to Do with It. You can find out more about the book at whatsleadershipgottodowithit.com. In 20 years we've been doing business, the outcome of the concept of the book and the show, just kind of as a backdrop for you, has to do with our approach in terms of what we do from an organization and what the book outlines, what I call the fundamental five. We're going to talk about, in the book, talks about cultural dynamics, which was last week's show. This week's show and next week's show get into the individual dynamics and kind of individual contributors, which is also why I've asked my guest Ray Klein to join. We also get involved in the fourth chapter of the book called Business Dynamics. And in the fifth chapter of the book is the structural dynamics. And those are the fundamental five concepts that are necessary for business. You know, we work with small and large companies as well. And our companies range anywhere from companies under 50 million to companies who range from 800 million to a couple hundred million. And for those who range from a billion plus, it covers the full gambit. And if you listen to last week's show, we talked about corporate culture, and the dynamic about last week's show was there were two guests on for last week. Both of them were clients that I've worked with across two different companies. One of the individuals worked for two previous companies that were less than $15 million in sales, family-owned. The other gentleman worked for two Fortune 500 companies. And the same set of dynamics that were created that we worked with in both client firms and across both companies had to do with some of the same intrinsic issues around corporate culture. So if you didn't get a chance to listen to that show, you can tune in to voiceamerica.com and it'll walk you through that show. But this show today is designed to cover Chapter 2, which gets into individual dynamics or individual contributors. As I mentioned, my guest today is Ray Klein. Ray and I work closely together with his current company, where he's at, since November 2009. We hooked up around August of 2009. Our first project we kicked off in November of 2009. And Ray comes with a vast degree of background in leadership selection. Ray's working on his doctorate. He's the HR director for one of our clients. He is also teaching five different courses on leadership and organizational development at University of Louisville and Spalding University. So welcome, Ray. Say hi to the guests.
Good afternoon, Rick. Thanks for listening, everyone. Happy to be here.
So Ray and I are going to kind of feed off one another, just like I did with Marty and Paul last week, in terms of talking about some dynamics from the organizational piece of things. But, you know, I got started doing this business from an idea and a concept. In 1987, I was asked to speak for a friend of mine who needed a last-minute speaker at a Rotary. And as we talked about, so what do you want to talk about? What's important? He said, I don't know. What do you feel like talking about? And we came up with a number of different ideas or things we could talk about. And finally, I said, you know, I just had been to a workshop on hiring and firing where they talked about hiring in the morning and firing in the afternoon. And while this show is not about hiring and firing, the dynamic was when I asked Bob, I said, so what do you think? He said, well, why don't we do something on hiring? We've never had any speakers on hiring at Rotary before. So I did a little kind of a 45-minute, what I would call a dog and pony show on hiring, ins and outs of hiring, some of my experiences to hiring. afterwards, there were three people that came up to me like I was some guru and had all the fundamental answers around selection and hiring and individual contributors. And so from 1987 to 1990, I spent researching tests and assessments and productivity and performance. And that's going to be some of the show today is kind of the talent management side of things. So I've asked Ray to join me because of the projects we're working on. Ray probably thought I was nuts when we first met because he said, well, what can you do to show me how much value you can bring to the table? And I said, well, I know that you've told me you've just hired 8 new people. And I said, let's run those 8 new people through the assessment process that we use. And I said, I'll tell you who I think will be here in a year from now. And Ray thought I was kind of nuts. So, Ray, why don't you kind of tell them what your thoughts were when we had that first conversation.
Well, it kind of got my attention, Rick, because I'll tell you, as a client, I get a lot of calls from folks who want to tell me about this assessment or this program or that program, and I don't take them very seriously. So that was pretty effective for me because it made me say, wow. This guy's he's already planning to follow up with me in a year. So he's pretty serious. He's either really full of beans or he's got a product that he knows he can walk the walk. That's what it's turned out to be. You know, as you know, I had a few favorite assessments prior to meeting you, and none of which are tools that you have chosen to use. So the products that you were using were brand new to me and didn't know anything about them. But your confidence that you could make that prediction really, really hit home. And that's somewhat what kind of got you in the door with our company.
And from that, it has morphed into a much, much larger venture in terms of our work together. Predominantly, a lot of work in the leadership arena, which we're doing some things now, in such as 360s and some leadership development. But the bulk of the work that Ray and I have done has really been driven towards the sales force. And there's well over 100 salespeople in this organization where Ray is from that we've had some specific targeted things on that we'll talk about later on in the show. But the show today is going to consist of talking about productivity and performance, human capital, talent management. We're going to get into some behavioral-based interviewing discussions. We're going to get into some assessment work and assessment discussions and some examples of some things. And the assessments that we'll talk about using a little bit later on, we'll get into some of the things that I've done in the last 20 years that stems from the 3 years of research I did around the world of assessments. And so when we talk about assessments, most people are familiar with Myers-Briggs and DISC and Predictive Index and Caliper, and those are some of the more pronounced instruments, none of which we really use. We'll use the DISC every now and then, but none of those instruments do we use for reasons that you'll find out later. In week 8 of the show, we're going to do a whole segment on making sense of testing, which really gets into the true elements of testing and those kinds of things that we don't have time to talk about today. But certainly some of today's talks about the assessment process and pre-employment assessments and kind of views on pre-employment assessments and the value behind pre-employment assessments. But the so Ray, if you would just share real quick, you know, as you looked at kind of your process and where you thought the strengths and weaknesses of your process was and where you thought some of the gaps were and some of the things that you and I talked about, what else kind of queried, you know, caught your attention as a differentiator for us in helping you do a better job of selection?
Well, we're using a behaviorally based interview process, and we feel like we're pretty good interviewers. But kind of the old days, you hear old time managers say, "Well, I'm a great judge of character, and I'm a good interviewer, and I ask tough questions." But really, the truth is, these folks, most people have learned how to present a pretty good face at an interview. You've heard the expression, we've got our game face on. People have their game face on. They come to an interview well-prepared, and interviews just don't tell you much. We all say we're a great worker. We all say we're a team player. We all say we want to find an organization to stay with and retire from. And we all say have learned how over time to say the right things in interviews. And, you know, Rick, in your book, you refer to A, B, and C players. What we learned in our organization, unfortunately the hard way, by looking at somebody a year and two down the road and they're not performing, is we learned that in the interview, A, B, and C players really don't look and sound very much different. They all kind of look the same, and the C player in the interview responds just as well as that A player. So we knew we had to look deeper. And so we went to a product that was customized for us that we found had a great deal of value as a screen. But it probably screened out those C players, but it still left us with A and B players, and we were still faced at the point of meeting you with the knowledge that not every A and B player is going to be a fit, and we just didn't have a tool at that time.
So as we get into kind of the further into the segment today, we'll talk more specifically about some of the findings that were unearthed, you know, behind that and what we learned from that in terms of working together. So when you look at then this week's topic and chapter two of the book, which is called Individual Dynamics, looks at those hiring those individual performers. And you know, my first aha moment was when I was my first sales manager position almost 40 years ago. My first sales manager position resulted in my first two sales hires, and I'll never forget them. Antonio Belinsky was my first hire, and John Florcheck was my second hire. And it looks like we've got about 30 seconds before we go to commercial. But nonetheless, neither one of those gentlemen worked out. I thought I could train them and teach them and coach them. Lo and behold, neither one of them worked. I had to let both of them go. And the rest kind of became history as I began my career saying, gee, I thought I knew how to hire good salespeople. I was the leading salesperson in the company, and I thought I could be the leading sales trainer in the company. Nothing could have been further from the truth. So I think we're getting ready to go to break, there we are.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network. 20 years of research shows us that 20 to 25% of an organization's sales force is underwater. A salesperson selling at 75% of quota is costing you at least $5,000, including opportunity costs. Our program, Developing Sales Force Effectiveness, shows you how to manage these underperformers more effectively. Improving the sales effectiveness of just two salespeople will give you a 100% return on investment. For more information, visit the Executive Group website at www.TheEG.com.
Tune in every Tuesday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time for The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. On the show, Aldana and some of today's top business professionals will discuss some of today's most pressing business issues that hold you, the business owner, back. Aldana will also give you 21 ways to grow with her list of growth strategies. Grow smart, grow profit, and grow your business with Aldana Ambler and The Growth Strategist every Tuesday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time. Right here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.
For the past 20 years, the Executive Group has helped organizations recruit, select, train, develop, and coach their most valuable asset, their people. Whether entry-level or top leadership, the Executive Group uses a variety of tools considered to be the gold standard in assessments and development to provide insight and direction to help our clients show the greatest return on their most valuable investment. For more information on how the Executive Group can help you link strategic intent with human capital, visit our website at www.theEG.com. When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network. You are listening to What's Leadership Got to Do With It, featuring your host, Rick Thiemann. If you have a question or comment about today's program, please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to assessment@theeg.com. Now, back to Rick Thiemann.
Hey, welcome back. Rick Thiemann here with my guest, Ray Klein, a current client we're doing a lot of work with. I'm with the firm called The Executive Group. It's a firm I started 20 years ago. And you can catch us at www.theeg.com. For those of you who are listening in for the first time, listeners can call in with questions at 866-472-5790. And we'd be glad to take your calls. Or you can email us at rick@theeg, R-I-C-K, at T-H-E-E-G, or the E-G. Email us your questions. Or even if you're listening and you got a chance, let us know you're listening and if you're enjoying the show and if you have any questions. So we're here talking about individual dynamics and the talent management process. You know, there was a great quote I found by Andrew Carnegie. He said, "Take away my people, but leave my factories, and soon grass will grow on the factory floors. Take away my factories and leave my people, and soon we will have a new and better factory." No one could have said it better in terms of the use of human capital. And in this particular segment, I want to talk about productivity and performance. And you know, in the book, I talk about you will never fulfill the potential of your business until you get the people process right, which ties in with that old good to great theory of get the right people on the bus and in the right seats. But, you know, most people don't really spend a lot of time analyzing the cost of turnover. And it's tough because it's not something on a balance sheet. It's not something on a scorecard, per se, other than employee turnover or perhaps even employee morale. But, you know, how critical is that? I'm going to ask Ray to speak to that in just a second, but I want to give the listeners an example of the cost of the lack of effective hires if you have never really put it into this kind of perspective. But when you look at the cost of turnover, it's anywhere from 2.5 times to 4 times annual salary. And the higher you are in the organization, the more extreme that becomes. But you know, if you've got somebody that's not performing, you've got the time on the progressive discipline, then you've got lost productivity because they're not performing. Then if you terminate, you may have some severance pay issues. Then you're going to have unemployment issues. Then you've got a right to help wanted ad. That's expensive. You've got to go through the search process, maybe even use a search firm. That's even more expensive. Then you've got the time to screen. You've got the interviewing piece. You've got all the documentation once you hire. Then you've got your orientation costs. Then you got your learning curve to get them up to speed. Then you got the training costs. And what happens if they don't make it in that amount of time? And in Ray's example, where I said, you know, of the 8 salespeople that we just hired, I predicted that 4 of them would probably wash out. And in fact, all 4 of them did. Well, could I have perhaps saved that ahead of the curve? I believe I can, which is why we began to talk. But just think of the cost. And at $60,000 per person, to bring in a new person, cost and train, and they leave within the first year and you got to repeat the process, that's $250,000 loss to the bottom line that you can't even track. Well, it goes further beyond the selection, and that's the actual productivity that comes into play. So when you look at productivity and turnover, let's just take a company with 100 people. And one of my clients I was in one day, and I said, you know, I said, can you tell me roughly how many people actually work here? He said, oh, yeah, that's easy, about 1/2 of them. So, but let's take a look at performance and productivity. Let's say that, is it fair that a person could waste 1 hour to 1.5 hours a day in non-productive work because of not getting the material on time, not knowing what to do, waiting for direction, waiting for guidance, being tied up in a meeting, being tied up on phone calls. And if you look at that as 1 hour to 1.5 hours a day, that comes out to almost 8 hours a week. So what's the cost of productivity? Well, here's the math. If you've got a 40-hour work week and the average employee is at $20 an hour with fully loaded benefits, you've got an $800 a week payroll per person. If you've got 100 people, that gives you an $80,000 a week payroll. If your performance issues are only 20% of the work week, you're going to lose $16,000 in payroll costs, not counting turnover costs. So, Ray, in one of your examples, you had a situation where individuals were high turnover in one of your specific departments. You just talked about what was there and the evolution and what you did.
Well, Rick, as you know, I transitioned within our organization from a couple different roles into HR, and it was at my request that I be given an opportunity to be part of succession planning in human resources. And so the first thing that I was given to kind of cut my teeth in the HR career, new to me, was to fix the problems. And we had a third shift production environment that literally retention was so bad we had just given up even tracking retention. We tracked turnover, and turnover was 340% annually. It was just off the charts horrendous, and we really hadn't been able to make a dent in it. So anytime you have a problem that big, it's multifaceted. But one of the first things that I learned was, again, back to that interviewing piece that we talked about earlier with sales. Folks talk about, really, the only thing they can talk about in their in the interview, and the only thing they can prove to you is they talk about why you should hire them. What we found was we were having retention. People were either quitting or being terminated because they pointed out on our progressive disciplinary attendance policy. And the reason that they were turning over was really related to their values. They valued time off more than they valued building a career. They valued watching the football game. This particular position required people come in on Sunday night. They valued Sunday night football more than they valued reporting to work. Well, you're never going to find that in an interview. You're never going to find that in an interview. So we started looking at interviewing better and using some assessments. And at that time, it was one of the products that was custom made for us, and we had some progress with it. As I said, it was multifaceted. We had to look at changing the candidate pool. We had to make some leadership changes on that shift. We had to change how we paid, and we had to change how we marketed the position as well.
So it's not just hiring alone. There's many things that start to look at the impact of productivity, what that means. And for those of you who listened last week, you may remember that in Marty's group of a 225 employee base, when we went in, the turnover was 40%. Well, we specifically used the assessment process to help us and the interview process to help us get that down to less than 10%. But so where else does productivity show up? And this is we do a lot in the work of Salesforce development. This is what caught Ray's eye and the VP of sales there where Ray's at. But you know, I use the example that if you hire a salesperson and that salesperson is selling or his quota is $1 million, and if the company is operating at a 10% EBITDA, that company is going to generate $100,000 of revenue off that $1 million in quota. Well, if a salesman's fully burdened at $80,000 to include insurance and cost of salary and cost of expenses, that company's going to net $20,000 per person. But if that salesperson's only selling at 75% of quota, then what are you really losing? Well, you're actually losing $5,000, which is the difference between 75% or $750,000 at 10%, which is $75,000 in net revenue, versus an $80,000 overhead. So you lose $5,000 per person for everyone who's selling under the mark. And in our 20 years of experience, we found that over 20 to 25% of a sales organization is underperforming and selling below budget. And that was no different in your organization, was it, Ray?
Oh, absolutely. That's exactly where we were, 25%.
So if you do the math, and let's just say you're a small business with $10 million in sales, and you've got 10 salespeople doing $1 million, then you're probably pretty profitable. But if you're that same $10 million company, if you've got 15 salespeople, and they're only averaging $660,000 a month, you're still doing $10 million. But you're losing money. If you've got 18 salespeople doing $500,000 a month, you're still at $10 million, but now you're really losing money on those 18 salespeople unless you can get the numbers up. So, you know, when we started working with Ray's organization and you've got 106-plus salespeople in the organization, it's real easy to see that you're losing probably $250,000 from the get-go. So if we could do a better job of hiring and a better job of development, which is what we'll talk about in next week's session, how you develop individual performers, if we could do a better job on the hiring side and close the gap by how we approach the hiring process and perhaps even use some type of pre-employment assessment process, we can find a way then to reduce our turnover, increase productivity, find those A-B players, eliminate the C players over time, and bolster and strengthen our sales force. So when we look at then that the individual performers and hiring individual performers, the whole talent management process then speaks to some of these things, and I'm going to list just a few things real quick. But when we stop and think about, so what's the talent management process include? It includes such questions as, are my people functioning as well as they can or as I need them to? It includes questions as, are my results what they should be? Do I have the right people on board and in the right seats? Who are my ABC players? Who should stay and who should go? Do they have the skills to do the job? More importantly, do they have the behaviors to do the job? How can we leverage this human capital resources we already have into a finely cohesive unit? How do we transform our workforce into a cohesive unit? And how will our leaders manage the growth? Those things in the talent management process then says, we got to do a better job of hiring right, interviewing right, selecting right, training them, moving them along in the process, getting them up to speed quicker, reducing the learning curve, provide the elements that drive the business to move forward. And really the question becomes is beyond the talent management process. And Ray, I want you to explore this a minute because again, as I mentioned earlier, you know, Ray teaches five different classes on organizational development. And so I'm going to make a kind of a statement from my perspective here. Ray, I want you to kind of – and I didn't preempt Ray for this. This is coming out of the blue for you, bud, okay? But here's the piece, and that is that it's my belief that unless an organization truly is committed to becoming and driving themselves as a learning organization, the talent management process, as we try to describe what it looks like, usually isn't effective because we have not adopted the culture of being a true learning organization. Ray, what's your take on that after the classes and stuff that you teach?
Well, I would certainly agree with you, Rick. And you know, that was another point where you coming into our organization to work with us, the timing was just perfect, and it was almost I would say before you can be an effective with a client, they've got to sort of get their mind right, and to get their mind right, they have to decide that everybody in the organization is going to have a developmental plan. And that's what I call a learning organization. Until everybody from literally janitorial to the president has goals to achieve to get better, you don't have a learning organization. You know, one of the things that I was thinking about a moment ago, I really want to put kind of a call out to any HR folks that might come across this program and say, Our HR organization, SHRM, Society for Human Resource Management, continues to remind us that HR's got to deliver quantifiable results, and HR has to be seen as somebody feeding the bottom line, not an expense on the bottom line. And that's really becoming more and more easy to do if we listen to programs and read books and study. Like you're challenging us to do, Rick. If HR people are talking about turnover and HR people are talking about retention and HR people are talking about non-productive sales forces and non-productive members of the sales force, they're going to pay for themselves so many times over, and HR will become the teachers within that learning organization and really the leaders of things that are non-traditionally HR. So I really, in the classes I teach and within the organization here, I really try to put that challenge out there to produce those quantifiable results.
So in kind of wrapping up that thought before we actually go to our next break, I think we're there.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
For the past 20 years, the Executive Group has helped organizations recruit, select, train, develop, and coach their most valuable asset, their people. Whether entry-level or top leadership, the Executive Group uses a variety of tools considered to be the gold standard in assessments and development to provide insight and direction to help our clients show the greatest return on their most valuable investment. For more information on how the Executive Group can help you link strategic intent with human capital, visit our website at www.theeg.com. 20 years of research shows us that 20 to 25% of an organization's sales force is underwater. A salesperson selling at 75% of quota is costing you at least $5,000, including opportunity costs. Our program, Developing Sales Force Effectiveness, shows you how to manage these underperformers more effectively. Improving the sales effectiveness of just two salespeople will give you a 100% return on investment. For more information, visit the Executive Group website at www.theeg.com.
No family can survive on two incomes anymore, let alone one. If you are supplementing your family's income working from home, then tune into The Cash Flow Show, Direct Sales Radio. Host Deb Bixler brings you sales tips, lead generation systems, and best business practices that guarantee direct sales success. Whether you're looking for a little extra cash or a career change, The Cash Flow Show, Direct Sales Radio will give you proven systems that will work in your home business. The Cash Flow Show. Every Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
You are listening to What's Leadership Got to Do with It, featuring your host, Rick Thiemann. If you have a question or comment about today's program, please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to assessment@theeg.com. Now, back to Rick Thiemann.
Hey, welcome back with my guest, Ray Klein, a client I worked with for a couple of years now on some major issues. Glad to have him on board, and it's been a pleasure working with him as we still continue to work through on some things. But welcome back to the listeners. If you're just listening in and you want to call and ask questions, please feel free to do so, 866-472-5790, or you can send those questions to rick@theeg.com. You're listening to What's Leadership Got to Do with It, which is the an outline of the book that's in the process of being written right now that talks about what I call the Fundamental Five. And this last or this third segment, we're going to kind of get into the human capital and dig a little bit deeper into. So what is this whole theory of human capital, and how do we get the right people on board, and what's the screening process? And one of the things that was so eloquently put in the book called Good to Great, if you ever read that, by Jim Collins, is getting the right people on the bus and in the right seats. And, you know, you're not going to win the Kentucky Derby with a Clydesdale or even a quarter horse by any means. So how do you make sure you get the right people on the bus and in the right seats? And reminds me of one of the clients where we were working with in the printing industry, and this individual ran the accounts receivable, accounts payable, and had poor performance reviews for a couple of years. But he had a lot of printing background. And the organization really wanted this individual to step up to the plate and do a better job. He just wasn't wired as the director of accounts receivable, accounts payable, but did a decent job, but not a great job. He wanted to go into sales. And as we looked at the assessment stuff, I looked at his background, his personality, kind of his fundamental philosophy and beliefs, and I tried to convince the organization to put him into sales. And they fought that and resisted that because he hadn't gotten performance reviews where he was at. So if he's not doing a good job where he's at, why would he do a good job in sales, which is something he's never really done before? And I got the organization to finally take a look at it. The real dynamic was that this individual was African-American and about 224 people in the organization, the only African-American individual in the entire company, and they wanted to let him go. The sales manager was Italian and was kind of made a number of somewhat racial slurs, but nonetheless, I got the organization to let this guy get into sales. He does $1 million in sales his first year, and of 19 salespeople, none of them ever did more than $19 million or never did more than $1 million in sales in their first year, and this guy actually does that. So, you know, we talk about job fit. Ray, why don't you just touch briefly? You and I spoke before the show about kind of your career path and how you got to be where you're at.
Yeah, Rick. You know, it ties into so many topics in your book: succession planning, putting people in the right place, motivational fit, organizational fit. pardon me. I happened to come in contact with a guy that I think is a pretty good leader. My current boss, and I was running a department here, and I was kind of at the top end of a career path, and had reached a pretty significant position. In all honesty, I was a B player, and I really don't have an accounting mind. I really don't have a computer technology mind. Those aren't things that excite me. What's always excited me is about helping people feel good about coming to work and feel good about the organization, more of the so-called soft skills, which I really reject that word. Those are the hardest skills there are, what we typically call soft skills. But I was a pretty good people developer and showed a lot of obvious passion for that. So I had a leader who said, you know, I got a B player. I need an A player. And I probably can't turn this guy into an A player because he's not an accountant. He's not a computer guy. But where could possibly he perform as an A player? So, I love the title of your book, What's Leadership Got to Do With It? Leadership's got everything to do with it. I had a leader who was willing to take a little bit of a risk, put a guy in an area where he was untested, but it was really a good fit for him, and consequently, you know, my career of just job satisfaction has certainly hit a peak for my life of working for, like you, almost, you include my work as starting in the business as a teenager. I've been working almost 40 years, and I'm more satisfied than I've ever been. And I'd like to think, through bringing in innovative programs and partnering with you, I can say that HR in this organization is going some places that we've never gone before. So I kind of think that because of my leader's ability to find the right place for the right person, we've hit a home run in a lot of ways. And it just ties in so perfectly with so many things that you talk about in the book.
So to kind of dovetail off of that, you know, we're going to talk next about, you know, the interview process, and week 11, we're actually going to get into interviewing formats and interviewing strategies. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it today as a program, where we have a whole program dedicated to that. But I want to talk briefly about the interview piece. And there's a huge thing that goes. There's a very, very large organization, extremely large organization. I won't name names because I'm not into that kind of scenario, but they're very, very big into behavioral-based interviewing, and I'm a proponent of behavioral-based interviewing, but it can't be preached and touted as the end-all be-all, and a lot of organizations that try to present and promote behavioral-based interviewing try to present that as the end-all be-all, and in my opinion, it's not. Of course, that's just my opinion.
I share that opinion, by the way.
So, and I was going to ask Ray to kind of expound on that, but you know, when we look at the problem lies in interviewing is that most interviewers are trained or aren't trained. I should probably say is a better word, but most interviewers look for experience, education, skill level, personal chemistry, that charisma. Do they feel like they can work with the person? You know, they use the words like, you know, I'm a good judge of character. You know, I know a good one when I see one. And we tend to make hiring decisions based on that educational piece, or that, gee, they've got an MBA, or whatever we hang their hat on, or they've got years of experience. But when you really stop and step back, the reason people get hired are for those reasons, but the reasons people get fired are for an entirely different set of reasons. They get fired for their attitude, their behavior, their interpersonal skills or lack thereof, their lack of performance. Those are the things that wind up getting people fired, but those aren't the things that we interview for. And even some of the behavioral-based interviewing pieces fall short of attacking that component piece. Which is why I believe that behavioral-based interviewing has its place, but then falls short. The other piece is, as you look at behavioral-based interviewing, the significance is, and the proponent or the reason why you want to look at that is because truly behavior is the single biggest predictor of performance. So if we can do a better job of uncovering behavior ahead of things versus after things, we're much more inclined to make a better hiring decision. So Ray, I know that you use currently a form of behavioral-based interviewing, and I know that over the years you found it fell short. Can you – not that either one of us, bear in mind to the listeners, neither one of us are dishing the fact that behavioral-based interviewing doesn't have its merit or credence. It does, but it's the overuse or over-reliance, maybe, Ray, is a better word. So what's your thoughts?
Well, you know, I'll say in the defense of behavioral-based interviewing, I don't see us ever abandoning it because it replaced the old style of interview where we'd say, well, Rick, tell us a little bit about yourself, and that almost took us nowhere. Behavioral-based interviewing is a great start. However, when screening for competencies, you know, I've never hired an accountant who couldn't count. I've never hired a truck driver who couldn't drive. I've never hired a salesperson that couldn't sell, and so on. So that's really what – tell me about a time when you solved this problem in your given field. That's an example of a behaviorally based question, and people can answer it. We terminate people because they can't work well with others. They have a propensity for – harassing fellow workers on the base of gender or race or whatever. We terminate people because they're chronically late with projects. And these are problems with job fit and organization fit that just don't come out in an interview. I mean, I don't know anybody who's skillful enough behaviorally based interview to get someone to admit, oh yeah, I'm late 4 out of 5 days. You can't be that good as an interviewer.
That's a great example.
The assessment will find that, you know, this person is a little non-conventional about norms and guidelines and so on doesn't really mean a lot to this person. So here's where I can show you on the 16PF where this person is going to have a real problem with deadlines. If deadlines are important to this job, then here's why maybe this isn't a good fit. You just can't find that because people just aren't going to admit in behaviorally based or any interview that they've got these chronic problems.
So, you know, there's many behavior-based approaches out there. We have developed our own. You know, for those of you who are interested in finding out more about that, we also do a workshop called Strategic View of Hiring that is both a half-day and or a one-day workshop. We're going to spend time, like I said, in show 11, talking about interviewing and interviewing formats and behaviors from that nature. And so while there's credence in behavioral-based interviewing, so what's the – how do you support it? If behavior-based interviewing is not the end-all be-all and your company is now using behavior-based interviewing and that's it, then what else are you using? So when we come back from the break, we're going to get into so what do you do next? What's the next piece? So grab a cup of coffee. We'll look to see you back in a couple seconds. Thanks for being with us.
Business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio, Voice America Business Network.
If you currently or aspire to serve on a board or work in a leadership capacity for or with a public or nonprofit organization, where can you turn to get the best advice and practices? How about Leadership Matters with Dr. G? Our program discusses challenges facing both public and nonprofit leaders. Don't miss these practical solutions and tips to enhance your leadership style and effectiveness. Leadership Matters with Dr. G airs live Wednesdays at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America Business Channel. For the past 20 years, the Executive Group has helped organizations recruit, select, train, develop, and coach their most valuable asset, their people. Whether entry-level or top leadership, the Executive Group uses a variety of tools considered to be the gold standard in assessments and development to provide insight and direction to help our clients show the greatest return on their most valuable investment. For more information on how the Executive Group can help you link strategic intent with human capital, visit our website at www.theEG.com. 20 years of research shows us that 20 to 25% of an organization's sales force is underwater. A salesperson selling at 75% of quota is costing you at least $5,000, including opportunity costs. Our program, Developing Sales Force Effectiveness, shows you how to manage these underperformers more effectively. Improving the sales effectiveness of just two salespeople will give you a 100% return on investment. For more information, visit the Executive Group website at www.theeg.com. When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network. You are listening to What's Leadership Got to Do With It, featuring your host, Rick Thiemann. If you have a question or comment about today's program, please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to assessment@theeg.com. Now, back to Rick Thiemann.
Hey, welcome back. This is Rick Thiemann with my friend and guest, Ray Klein, a current client we're doing a lot of work with. If you're just new to the show, you can call in with any questions at 866-472-5790 or send us an email at rick@theeg, that's theeg.com. We'd love to hear from you and love to hear your questions. This fourth and final segment we're going to talk about as we talk about individual dynamics and individual contributors, it's about, okay, so now, you know, what's next? And so do we test or we do not test? You know, and the old adage of the good to great piece and getting the right people on the bus and in the right seats, you know, what is the piece of how do we go about getting them and uncovering these things to help us do a better job in the selection process? There's a lot of hubbub out there about pre-employment testing and whether or not should we use pre-employment testing. And my question is, why not? And the lawyers say, well, it's got high degree of litigation. You know, one of the things that most people don't understand is it's not the testing that gets you in trouble. It's your lack of a proficient process that gets you in trouble. That's where the discriminations and the lawsuits come in. Rarely is it ever the testing. It's typically that your process is not robust or you're discriminating from who you're testing and who you're not. But we'll talk about more of that in the interview section that we do and in the class, in the session where we talk about making sense of testing. But so I'm going to read you – this is a case study just to kind of give you an idea. And Ray had a comment that he'll share with you. But this is a report that was part of a report that was written for a client up on the East Coast, manufacturing firm. They were getting ready to hire a gal in a product marketing manager position. She had come out of Stanley Tools and had a PhD in chemistry and just a really, really bright, smart lady. And this organization had gotten my name to use. This was their first evaluation that they used me for. And so I did a little phone debrief with them about their test results on a Friday. We tested on a Thursday, did a phone debrief with them before I left Boston from the airport on Friday. On Monday, they called me to ask back and write a report. I'm going to read you an excerpt from that report. They went ahead and hired the lady and made her an offer. And so I'm going to just read you real quick part of my report. I'm not going to read the whole report, but part of it says because her ego and energy level are so extremely high, she may have a tendency at times to talk down to people because of her intellectual superiority or because she may have trouble with the balance of power and may tend to challenge those above her if she does not hold them in high regard. Her Ms. Sample prefers to be the center of attention and may become petulant if social feedback is lacking. She prefers a more casual, informational atmosphere and feels the lines of authority should be loosely defined. She has a preference for being open and communicative. She has a high need for being accepted as well as being the center of attention. These may cause her to be overly blunt at times. She may think that she should say or would be better held back and discuss at a different time. Furthermore, she likes to have the last word. There may be a degree of naivety. So there was some number of things that I wrote about this lady in the report. And the organization, you know, had used me for the first time, wasn't sure, you know, the degree of accuracy of what this would really tell them. But 2 years to the day, 2 weeks to the day, the HR director called me and she said, you know, we didn't really believe that you could be that predictive of behavior. And not only that, we didn't believe that we would see that behavior this early on or this quick. Now what do we do? I said, well, you either got to cut your strings now or figure out how to manage the performance piece. And they let her go. And the next trip back to Boston, I was having dinner with the president. He says, you know, I said, if I'd have been able to get this report prior, he said, I never would have hired her. I said, well, we talked about never hiring in the first place when we talked on the phone. So, Ray, when I kind of gave this information to Ray, would you mind telling the listeners what your comment was to me?
Well, two comments, Rick. One, obviously, that person is going to be difficult to manage. Now, can that person be managed? Possibly they can. But my comment is in kind of proving what we've been talking about almost for the last hour. The qualities that made that lady unsuccessful will never come out in an interview. Again, like I said, I don't know anybody. I don't think we're ever going to find anybody skillful enough as an interviewer to have someone say, yeah, I'm really difficult. And my last three bosses have said I'm really tough to manage. That's just not going to happen. Those words are not going to come out because folks have their game face on. But there's obviously, I think we all know, can point to experiences we've had. There's data missing from the interview, and you got my attention as being someone who could find us that data that does not come out in an interview, and you've delivered.
Well, and I truly thank you for that. But let's talk about, you know, to help the listeners really understand about this whole pre-employment testing and how it can be used not only for pre-employment but for succession planning and development and for coaching as well, which we'll talk about in the next segment. But, you know, back to the piece of, you know, do you guess or do you assess? And in my motto, it, you know, guess or assess says, you know, I can flip a coin and yeah, I can take a gamble and maybe I can get the information I need from the interview. But are there tests that can help me gain more insight? And, you know, there's lots of great tests on the market. The one that I use, most people have never heard of, and there's a reason they haven't heard of it. It's because it's a psychologically based test, not a behavioral based test. And most people are familiar with the Myers-Briggs and the DISC and predictive index and the caliper. Those are probably more than pronounced. But those are behavioral based tests, not psychologically based tests. And so most HR folks have never heard of them. And when I brought this to Ray, Ray had done extensive research in various kinds of assessments and was using assessments currently within his organizational model, but had never heard of the one I brought to the table because most HR people have never heard of it, and it's called the 16PF. And we'll spend more time on that in the Making Sense of Testing section, but other psychological assessments would be the CPI, which is the California Personality Inventory, the FIRO-B. The Myers-Briggs doesn't classify as a psychological instrument, much to maybe many people's dismay, but and the Myers-Briggs is not a selection tool. It's a coaching tool. It's a development tool, not a selection tool.
Correct, and it's not marketed as a selection tool either.
That's correct.
But a lot
that's
of people correct. Are using it incorrectly
yep.
and trying to force it into that role, and it's not going to do the job there.
So when I brought my assessment process to Ray, this assessment process is something that's been developed over the last 20 years, and prior to that, three extensive years of research that told me that the 16PF was probably the most, if not one of the most, world-recognized, world-renowned psychological instruments that looks at deep-seated behavior that touches on the areas of emotional intelligence and intellectual ability that the majority of the assessments do not. So a couple of its competitors would be the CPI, the California Personality Inventory, even the Hogan to a degree. We also do use the Hogan in certain settings. The FIRO B is not all that strong, but it's a good instrument. The NEO, the strong interest, are all great tools. But you've got to have a tool that even for us in our international clients gives you the ability to look at whether or not an individual can handle an international assignment through our expatriate scale that very, very few of our competitors can even match to that. But when I brought my process to Ray, and the reason I was so confident in telling Ray, look, I'll tell you who I think will make it of the eight people you just hired. Let me see their resumes. And let me see, you know, your current interview results, and let me look at my test results. The reason I had such confidence is because the predictability of the 16PF that I used had such huge predictive behavior. Here's another thing that happened, and Ray, you can validate this, but after we did the assessment work and had the assessment data on 106 salespeople, I brought to Ray and the VP of sales what I thought were the 15 worst performers, not having any other knowledge of their performance other than their test results. And Ray, was I wrong on any of them?
No, we actually I think about 12 of them were already on our radar, and there were three who had started pretty well, but they had actually started to slip. So you were pretty well 15 for 15.
And so, and again, am I always that good? Do I have a crystal ball? No, but the power of the instrument that I use and 20 years of using it and having looked at over 8,000 assessments in those 20 years, it gives me a leg up on most people who are out there just trying to sell tests. We don't sell tests. You can go out and buy the disc or the caliper or you can go buy any of those tests. But we try to provide the educational service that teaches you how to do that. So in my analogy of guess or assess, in working with Ray's organization and saying, look, you know, we've got some people that we've already hired. We can do a better job of screening, certainly, but now what do we do with the people that we've hired? And we're going to spend more time next week talking about this and addressing this specifically. But when you look at behavior as the single biggest predictor of performance, you have to have a behavioral-based instrument that uncovers the depth of behavior that could be problematic. And the 16PF is one of the few instruments to do that. So, Ray, you used what? The Myers-Briggs, you've used DISC. What else have you used in your experience?
Well, we used the PI for that organization, that night shift, third shift production environment that I described. We're using the PI, and it was very, very broad. It created what they called a profile, for example.
Hey, Ray?
Yes.
Ray, we're running late. Hopefully next week we continue this. I got to cut because we're about ready to end the show.
Okay, fantastic.
And I certainly appreciate you being on as a guest. And for those listeners, we'll look for to see you next week at the same time, 12 o'clock Central Standard Time, where we'll have the continuation of the show.
Thank you, Rick. Thanks, I enjoyed it.
Thanks for being with us, Ray. And for those listeners, thanks again for tuning in.
Thank you again for tuning in to What's Leadership Got to Do With It? Please join your host, Rick Thiemann, again next Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, 12 noon Central, and 10 a.m. Pacific on the Voice America Business Channel. Have a great week.